So at one stage, he was public enemy number one. I'd argue that he still is public enemy number one. And many of you called into this particular show to say that he should actually go to prison. I'm, of course, talking about our favorite Tsotsi, Jacob Zuma, former president of South Africa, who was unceremoniously, basically moved out of his position. But today we look back exactly a year where the NPA announced that it was, doing a 180. They said, oh no, charges, blah, blah. And all of a sudden they're going to charge him. But it's been a year since that particular decision's been taken. So where are we today? Are we going to see justice? Is this man actually going to answer to a lot of those charges that have been put to him? Karen Morn, what a pleasure having you on the show. Good morning.
Thanks for having me. Great to be here.
Now, let's talk about, it's been a year on. What are some of the stumbling blocks for those who've not been keeping an eye on this case?
Essentially what's happened is the former president has brought what's called a permanent stay of prosecution application that is going to be heard over the last few days of May, which of course is the ANC's, the country's big election month. Essentially what he's arguing is he's effectively putting the NPA on trial, and he's arguing that there's been undue delay in prosecuting him, and that delay cannot be solely blamed on him, that it is actually largely the NPA itself's fault, something which the NPA concedes. I think one of the NPA's biggest problems, and it emerged very strongly in the documentation, was that that they didn't put him on trial, Jacob Zuma, with his former financial advisor, Shabir Sheikh. In 2003, Sheikh was convicted in 2005, and in notes that we wrote about, the prosecution team saying undoubtedly that if he had been put on trial with Sheikh, he would have actually been convicted. And of course, the entire trajectory of the country's future may have been quite different. He's arguing that basically he should have been given the right to go on trial with Sheikh, cross-examine Sheikh, dispute what Sheikh was saying. There's been suggestions that maybe Sheikh used his name, that there was a revolving loan agreement, all those kind of things, and that essentially this was unfair. He's also saying that the NPA, their decision to withdraw charges against him based on the spy tapes, using a wrong piece of the law to do so, and ultimately forced to concede that was the case. And then, of course, we saw that whole matter, being the decision to charge him being overturned, to withdraw the charges being overturned, and then the NPA making that decision to institute charges against. He's saying, well, that wasn't my fault. These guys were inept, and why must I, 17 years after the fact, go on trial? Of course, the NPA is saying that rule of law has been the ultimate victim of what's happened in this case, that the interest of justice, the evidence is so strong that Jacob Zuma must go on trial, that there's a compelling case against him, and that the Constitution demands that everyone is equal before the law, and that they say that at most there was a delay of 22 months that they can be blamed for, but they argue that the former president himself is responsible for many of the delays that he complains about.
Well, of course, even initially when... if we look at the fact that Sheikh was convicted, etc., there was a whole S-storm around it. We've had the Malemas. We've had everybody putting so much pressure on this whole thing that some people would argue it would have been difficult for the NPA to continue. But then Jacob Zuma himself over the years has gone to court to try and, stay out of the particular system. So, that will surely be taken into account as well.
Well, this is why the court is walking such a fine line, because this issue of undue delay is a very pivotal one in permanent stay of prosecution applications. Now, the Constitutional Court has pronounced on this, and they've said, there really has got to be a high bar for a court to intervene and say you can't continue with this case. We've seen this happen in the past in terms of prosecution of Andrew Phillips, who of course owns the gentleman's establishment known as the Grand, but he had rather tumultuous time with the NPA with issues of delay, and actually successfully brought a permanent stay of prosecution application, if I remember correctly. But the Constitutional Court very, very adamant that there have to be high standards met. And it's really going to be about how this court says, well, what was Jacob Zuma responsible for, but what was the NPA responsible for? And remember when Sheikh was convicted in 2005, Yeah. You know, it was mirror images of the Sheikh charges that Zuma was charged with. But because they had certain, you know, he had given certain evidence about giving Jacob Zuma more money than he'd actually been tried for. And the DSO, the Scorpions at that stage, then decided they were going to launch search and seizure operations. And that resulted in the netting of something like 93,000 documents, which, of course, yep. The former president being challenged in court. And that caused a delay of like 2 years. So, in those circumstances, the court's going to have to say, well, should they have just put him on trial straight away? Was that what was appropriate? Or were they completely within their rights as an investigative and prosecutorial body to say, we think there's actually more here, and elevate this from a sort of simple, inverted commas, fraud corruption case to a racketeering case where Jacob Zuma is essentially painted as kind of a linchpin within an organized crime entity, as it were. So those are the kind of questions that the court is going to be answering. And I feel extremely sympathetic for this judge because as I've read a fraction or I'm still trying to get through these documents, thousands and thousands and thousands of pages, Kino, and really the NPA in many ways being put on trial here in terms of its conduct in this case and Jacob Zuma himself, having to face these accusations that he's simply trying to avoid the inevitable.
Well, I tell you, this soapy is going to give Bold and the Beautiful a run for its money when it comes to longevity. But we'll keep an eye on it. We'll certainly be following you, Karen. I know you'll be doing, as I said, you're a great investigative journalist. You're going through all these documents, and we'll be keeping an eye on some of the work that you'll be doing as well. And I got this message saying, Kino the Grand, isn't it the cigar lounge? No, that is what
it
says.
Well, maybe, I wouldn't know. I mean, I will take your word for it.
No, apparently that's what it says on the slip. But anyway, great chatting to you. Karen Moore, investigative journalist at TESO Black Star. It is 8:15. This is Breakfast. I'm Kino with you until 9.